Hello and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces, the Only Fools and Horses rewatch podcast with me, Bobby, and my brother, Jamie. Good evening, Jamie. How's it going?
Oh, good, mate. How are you doing?
Very well indeed.
I am super happy to be... Well, no, this is a massive lie. I'm super unhappy to be back in England because we've got storms going on. So Storm Dennis has just been coming through this weekend. So it's been wet and windy and miserable, and I want to be back in sunny New Zealand massively. So that's all quite horrible. However, I was very excited to get onto recording the podcast because it's a lot easier having the same time and a place to record in and all the logistical stuff not being a problem. So that is the only pleasant thing about being home so far.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've been living in a constant storm for about 6 weeks. I'm so done with this season, it's beyond belief. But yeah, it's nice that one of us isn't desperate to go to bed and the other one hasn't just woken up. That makes I'm pretty sure that's going to make for a much better pod, but we'll find out.
Definitely. What did you think about the episode?
I mean, I said at the end of the last episode it wasn't one I was massively looking forward to. I don't think it's one that I enjoy. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's one I've actively avoided for a long time. And, yeah, I don't think it surprised me. It's not one I'm going to be rushing back to, let me put it that way.
Well, it's funny, because at the end of the last ep, you said that there's been none that you actively didn't, that you actively disliked. So, I mean, has it been bordering on that?
That's probably a bit strong, but, I mean, I was borderline bored at points.
See, for me, it was actually the complete opposite. I we'll go into it in a minute, but I had a bit of an emotional roller coaster. So as soon as it opened, I was just like, "Oh my god, I forgot about this. It's nostalgia." Then I was like super happy. Then I found it really funny. Then I was like really sad. Then I was really angry, and then I was really happy again. And in the end, I was like, "Actually, I really quite liked that episode, but it's because I remembered so little about it." I only remembered a few negative points. All of the positives were just like, you know, fresh out of the box when you don't expect it to sort of thing to happen. So for that reason, I actually really loved it. I'm looking forward to talking about the bits I loved as well.
I think that's what we're always hoping for, right, with those episodes that we don't necessarily remember so fondly, is looking to be surprised and having elements that maybe we didn't remember. They just weren't nearly enough of them to redeem it in my mind.
I think that will get more prevalent as we move on. I skimmed through a couple of episodes of the later, or some later series with one of my mates a bit earlier, and I was just like, oh, I remember so little from these episodes. But I think that'll do for the little prologue. So let's get into series 2, episode 7, Diamonds. Eight. All right. Series 2, episode 8, Diamonds Are For Heather. Stick a pony in me pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the... All right, scene 1, Nag's Head. And this was just straight away that moment where I massively beamed with a smile. Because as soon as it opened, I knew exactly what was happening at the end of the scene. I completely had forgotten... Not that this scene existed. I think we even talked about Old Shep in a few episodes ago, but I completely forgot it was in this episode. But it took a quarter of a second for me to go, yes, I know what's happening. And I was really happy straight away.
I think I had the same thing. I was definitely surprised by the Spanish Knight. And obviously the second you see it and you open up, I knew the whole scene. And I had forgotten it was this episode. And it was, for me, definitely the highlight of the episode was this whole scene.
Just the first scene?
Yeah, I mean, without doubt.
I can't wait to play my little highlight later.
this has to be the best scene in the whole episode for me. But yeah, so it's Spanish Knight de Nag's Head. And Grandpa looks like full of the joys of spring.
Grandpa?
Granddad? Then why have I written Grandpa? Why have I written Grandpa? I've written this, Grandpa, and I've read Grandpa. That's what I've done.
That's really funny, because one of the things our friend Rich was talking about when he was around earlier, we were talking about the last episode, and he said, look, I just want to get it straight. is it Ridgemere or Ridgemore? Because last week you were kind of saying both, and I was like, yeah, right? I was saying Ridgemere, you were saying Ridgemore, and then halfway through you changed to Ridgemere, and then I think you went back to Ridgemore again.
Ridgemere, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Ridgemere, but it drove me insane at the time. Never mentioned it, edited it, drove me insane, and then still never spoke to you about it.
Yeah, that is entirely believable. I've certainly been known to make my fair share of linguistic cock-ups, which is a really good trait to have in a podcaster.
yeah, I'll just have to correct you on that.
No, do, please.
So what's Grandpa doing anyway?
Yeah, so Grandad is just looking very jolly, which is nice. There aren't many times we see him very jolly, as he's normally a miserable old git most of the time. Ronnie's also having his time with the life. They're all drinking sangria out of the jugs, and there's Spanish music in the background. It looks like a fun night out.
Yeah, it's not too bad. We find out that Del is in a bit of a downer because he, to quote a previous episode, has got the elbow from some tart. And has managed to lumber himself with 2 tons of hooky persil. And Grandad's telling Rodney to be a little bit sensitive about it. He comes back to the bar and it seems like a very weird concept, but Rodney has the idea to have a little family sing song, which might liven the mood. Even more weird, Del's bang up for it.
I think that is like a Cockney thing though, like a family sing song.
Yeah, but it never happens again.
Like a football kind of chanty almost sort of thing. It is a bit weird. We'd never do it at a pub. And also that it's a music night, so I don't know if everyone else around them would find it mental or not. It is a bit weird.
Yeah, it's a bit random just in a pub to start shouting out random songs.
Did you know the song from any other time?
Shit, no, did you?
No, of course I didn't. But I did like check out what it was, because I was assuming it was an old sing-along song, yeah. And I was intrigued what it was. Okay. So I've forgotten the name of the, I think it was a ship. But yeah, it's an old, like, Second World War chant, basically. Against,
oh, really?
Against the Germans.
We're going to hang out the washing on the seafront or something, isn't it?
No, the old, it's the name of a ship. So I can't write it down. I could have written it down, but I didn't, so I can't remember what it was.
You're quite good at, like, half-taking notes.
I relied on the memory, but it seems to have failed me. But yeah, so I hang out the washing on the old something, and it was a German. It was a World War II song sung for morale against the Germans.
Okay, nice.
So it might have been something that, you know, Cockneys might have done. I had a sing along in pubs, for all I know. I mean, it's possible.
Del calls over Enrique, and I do really love this exchange.
Sing old ship. Senor, it's not possible to sing the old ship song. It is, the tragic song. It makes the tears fall from the eyes.
Go on, sing old ship.
Look, leave it out, will you, Del boy? I've got a living to earn. Sing old ship.
When I was a lad, an old ship was...
Which is just a really interesting exchange. It kind of is again showing that Del is respected / feared amongst people that know him. He's only got to give him a little look, and
it's a big look, really, wasn't it?
yeah. And it's managed to be enough for him to start doing it. And the pub just basically clears out instantly as soon as the first lyrics come out of his mouth. They're just going out in droves.
I really liked the that Spanish accent change thing. I thought it was really fun. Totally something I can imagine happening in real life. You know, a guy he's probably got a Spanish parent, so he can play up to it. He knows he can do the accent. Enrique might even be his real name, but really he's just a Cockney. I thought that was great. It's funny. I knew Old Ship was like a really old song, and I knew there were multiple versions. I knew there was like a Johnny Cash version and an Elvis version, but I didn't know just how old the song was. I don't know if you looked into it at all.
No, not at all. I imagine bloody old.
The first original song was from 1933.
Oh, it's pretty
and
old.
Then it became later in the sort of 50s and 60s and beyond, it became a bit of a country classic.
Who else sang it? Elvis?
Elvis and Johnny Cash are the two versions that I'd heard of
Johnny
before.
Johnny Cash sang it as well?
Yeah, Johnny Cash did a version, one of the later ones, in like the 70s, I think it was.
I have to listen to that.
But it became one of those country songs that everyone does covers of, you know? Yeah, I had no idea it was is so old. For some weird reason, I thought that maybe Elvis's was the original, but was clearly very wrong.
So we get a little crossfade from the camera, and we see a much more empty-looking pub, and we get a little bit of a reveal. Straight away, I recognised that Heather was sitting there, and I completely forgot that this is how they met as well. And as soon as I saw her, I was like, oh, wicked, there she is. That's how that happens. Really, really good-looking woman.
Yeah, she's a very attractive lady.
And I think when I was talking about No Greater Love, and I said I thought she was better looking, you clearly get these two episodes just a bit mixed up, because yeah. Heather is a stunning woman, and Irene just wasn't.
I mean, you could tell Heather's a stunning woman because despite that haircut, she still looks really nice.
Oh, I like that haircut though.
It's awful, mate. It's awful.
No, it's great. It's so that 80s.
So 80s.
Yeah,
the short but big thing. I mean,
yeah, the bouffant.
Yeah, she's like a brunette Lady Diana. I mean, that's essentially the look she's gone for.
Yeah, yeah, very Lady Di. And Del's clocked her, and as always, goes up pretty confidently. And he just drops a brilliant line once they've started having a chat.
That was a lovely song, that, ain't it? Beautiful, eh? Always gets me right here, that does, yes. Always brings back such poignant memories.
Did you have an old dog?
Oh, I've had many old dogs in my time. what did you say your name was?
And he puts his foot in it a little bit. Gives her the Heather is one of my most favourite name
classics.
Lines. Yeah. Comes up with that.
I'm pretty sure there's like this chuckling from the crowd because he says Heather about four times and just, I think, pronounces it worse each time. Like, with just like a stronger action. Oh, Heather. But yeah, he's pretty smooth, actually, in this exchange. I thought he was pretty good. You know, he's quite laid back. He's on it. He's not overdoing it like you see with some women. I thought he looked pretty good, except for one very bad joke. Did you pick up on that?
No, go on.
When she says, he's talking about taking her out, and she says she lives in
Brixton.
Yeah. And he makes a Rorke's Drift reference.
Yeah, I didn't get it, and I didn't bother looking it up. But well, I thought maybe you would.
Rorke's Drift is one of the battles against the Zulu.
Oh, right, okay.
So I can only think that's a reference to there being a high population of immigrants in Brixton. That's surely the only way that is a joke, which is just, it doesn't even really seem to land at the time. The audience is a bit kind of,
I thought they did laugh quite a lot. I thought it was just one of those massive disassociation jokes where he just got it completely wrong.
I felt like Heather looked uncomfortable, but that might have just been me projecting my discomfort onto her. Because I was straight away, I was like,
projecting discomfort off one of your assumptions that there's minor racist connotations.
Well, it's not minor. That's, I mean, it's, yeah, referencing a Zulu war for that is pretty. I imagine that's a bit definitely cut in modern TV versions.
But that's joke. Assuming that is the crux of the joke.
I'm assuming it is because I can't. If you play the joke back, that's, I don't see what else it could be a reference to.
His mannerisms just seemed like he was being stupid and not knowing where it was or choosing the wrong thing. But who knows? I didn't get the reference, so I may have just been misreading his mannerisms.
Who knows? Either way, moving swiftly on, he does quite well. He does come across quite smooth, and he does convince her to go out for some afters. Little drink down a nightclub.
Which, again, I thought was interesting, because Dale's not going to be on the Coca-Cola all night. So he's already had a few sangrias, but he's offered to drive her home. So I was wondering, like, you know, I never really thought about it before, but you kind of imagine that Dale's probably doing, you know, a fair amount of drinking and or driving.
Yeah, man, that's pretty par for the course back then, though.
And it was funny, it made me curious to look into the drink driving limits, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. I love how we just both choose to look up completely different things in this episode. It's really interesting.
So part of it comes from, I spent quite a few years living in New Zealand, and one of the things that I was told once by somebody, I don't know how much truth there is, but in New Zealand, however long it was, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago, the drink driving limit was very, very low. And someone had talked about a poster that they had seen that it was something like, oh, don't have that fifth pint because, you know, that's one too far. And basically 4 pints was fine and 5 pints was like taking
I'm pretty taking sure that was a T-bed. That was a campaign in Britain as well. It was like a reference to driving in the fifth gear and the fifth being one too many.
Well, this is what kind of made me look it up, because I was curious as to how the drink driving limit might have changed. And rather amazingly, the drink driving limit and the breath test, as we know it today, actually came out in 1981. So pretty much exactly the time that we're at now. And it was rolled out and in common use by around sort of circa 1983. So even more amazingly, the amounts that came out then haven't changed. So the legal limit today is exactly the same as what it was in 81 and 83. This is assuming that the sources that I'm reading are correct, but they all seemed pretty legit, quoted milligrams to millilitres, all that sort of stuff.
Interesting.
So yeah, I was super surprised. I then looked at, I went into like some New Zealand National Library archive thing. Jesus. Not on purpose, it's just as I was searching, that's what came up. And their limits weren't that much different, maybe only slightly different from what I could see 20 years ago. So I now just don't know who to trust about what, but as far as I can see, the drink dry limit has changed very little in 30 years.
I think a lot of it is maybe just culturally, though, what is acceptable. I think like even now in England, plenty of people were like, oh, when I'm having it with a meal, I can have a second pint, even though that would, for most people, take them over the limit. And maybe back in the day, I think people just didn't really worry about it too much. Where, for example, where I am in Norway, the drink drive limit is crazy low. And so most people, in fact, pretty much everyone, if you're driving, you just don't drink.
Do you know what it is?
I know it's the equivalent that if you have like a 4% beer and a 0.33 bottle, you're probably over.
Because the only thing, randomly, one of the things that was linked into it was the Scottish limit is actually lower than the rest of it. I don't know if they're the UK, but I'm pretty sure it's the rest of the UK. But Scottish drink dry limit is about 50% less. So whereas English is 80 milligrams or whatever to 100 millilitres, Scotland is like 50.
I've got a weird fit. The number 20 rings a bell, but I might be making that up. But I know that Norway has one of the lowest. And so, yeah, but culturally here, it's not even a thing, because if you're driving, you don't drink. Like I've had people turn down having a sip taster of a beer I was drinking because they were driving. Like people just, not everyone's like that, but that is not uncommon to have that kind of attitude towards drinking and driving.
Which isn't completely unhealthy, but pretty weird.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyway, a bit of rabbit hole for drink driving. And they go off, and we head into scene two, which is in Heather's flat. Because if you are the best, but you don't ask
questions, then brother, I'm your man. They've been out for drinks, and they arrive back as Del has promised. He's dropping Heather back at her flat, and of course walking her up to her door like the gentleman that he is. He gets invited in, and this is essentially a carbon copy, it seems, of the flat from No Greater Love. I mean, you said it earlier, and it's very true. These two episodes are really, really similar in many ways. And so that's what we're looking at. They seem to joke about how terrible it is, but quite frankly, it's one of the best ones we've seen, so it's weird. That's a bit odd. But it's perfectly nice.
Del moves in rather coolly and calmly, gives a little hug from behind and says, servez frais mon anglaise, which is actually not bad French. It says, serve fresh me, no ice. So it kind of is...
Because she is making a drink, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, she's making wine. So... So yeah, I mean, obviously no eyes, but you know, at least it's kind of topical and relevant. But they have a little bit of a snuggle. He's given a little kiss on the neck, and suddenly the light comes on, and Eric Morecambe walks in.
Very good.
I thought so.
He does look like Eric Morecambe. That's a good show. So this for me, to steal a phrase from another podcast, he's a real that guy. This guy has been in so many things.
Oh, really?
I recognise him straight away, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I've seen him in a couple of different things. So I quickly looked him up, and he's just one of those people who's been in tons of things. He's still in tons of things all the time, just always playing small parts. The thing I looked for him, because I felt like I could picture him in The Young Ones, I don't know why, but I couldn't find it. And so I was like flicking through the whole thing, being like, if it's not The Young Ones, then what is it? And it was Bottom.
Oh, okay.
He played a doctor in an episode of Bottom. Oh. And most of the characters he's played have been like,
yeah, does the doctor come to the house? Hmm? I don't suppose you remember. Do you remember if the doctor comes to the house?
No, it's I saw a little screen grab of him as the doctor, and it helped remind me that that was definitely where I knew him from. He's wearing like pink overalls and stuff. They're at a doctor's. So I don't remember exactly which episode it is off the top of my head, but they're at a hospital. But yeah, he's been in loads of stuff, and he always plays these like authoritative figures, like lawyer and barrister and doctor and stuff like that. But weird guy to have playing your neighbour and babysitter. I don't know. That was weird.
I think it's just played for the fact that the initial reaction is quite like, oh, you're right. Well, I mean, touching on this a bit more. So this is a little belated, but I happened to watch a UK TV Gold special for David Jason last night. Because 2 weeks ago, which is, like I say, a bit belated, was David Jason's 80th birthday. Happy birthday, Mr. Jason. Imagine if he listened to this.
He's never going to listen to this.
But imagine if he did. Anyway, so 2 weeks ago, he was 80. Hats off to him. And there was a little UK TV Gold special dedicated to him, which was really cool. There are a few bits that were a little bit, you know, boring in regards to the fact that it was just very, it was like they were saying trivia that everyone knew or any sort of good fan would knew, so it wasn't great. But there was some really cool stuff because it wasn't only fools related, that went through Don't Adjust Your Set and some of the earlier stuff that he was in, which was really, really cool. And one of the things, it was actually Johnny Vegas doing the show. I love Johnny Vegas. And one of the things he said, I'm sure it was scripted, but he said that David Jason was probably one of the all-time greats and best physical comedians of our generation. And, you know, it's something that we've always said is he is very physically good, but just to hear it sort of reinstalled on that and then to watch this today, that exchange, when the light comes on and he sees that dude, you have to watch it. It's about 8 minutes and 12 seconds. It's so perfect. David Jason, he looks left, he looks right, he looks left, he looks right. He brings his hand up in a calm motion. He's, you know, there's all sorts going on. He's like worried and trying to calm it down. And then just seconds later, it's just all hilarious. And it's kind of funny. It's kind of subtle and like really small movements, but they're big. You can see them. But it's believable, even though it's almost accentuated. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I also, that's kind of what he does well. Like, he does those, I think you described it pretty well, that they're all body movements that are made bigger, of course, to be a bit theatrical, but also believable. And yeah, they're really full body. I mean, I just wrote down Del's face was amazing. I actually just wrote Del's face. Yeah, it was great. I thought that reaction to him coming in, because he's obviously tall and yeah, he's obviously old, looks kind of older and stuff and balding, but he's still like a big bloke and a bit intimidating. And straight away, Del's like, oh, fuck, what have I walked into? But yeah, I thought it was a great, great scene.
The special showed loads of his sort of comedy moments in some of the earlier stuff as well. And just like really slapstick moments where he's like falling over and falling to the side. And he's really good at just falling over and just making a prat of himself. He's an absolute legend.
It is a skill. So here's where, well, I mean, the episode takes a massive downturn and never really recovers, in my opinion. So Heather starts giving us this sob story about her husband who buggered off 18 months ago and never came back. And again, it's very No Greater Love. I mean, they're even in the same part of the room with some woman going on about her husband's no good. Only difference is it's less interesting and stuff, because before it was a husband who's in prison and it's all a bit more exciting. This is kind of more boring, less interesting, and I think not even acted as well. Not that No Greater Love was acted particularly fantastically by whatever her name was. It slips my mind. Irene. But I didn't... I didn't find Heather particularly engaging in this scene, to be honest.
It's funny, actually, because I did something that you normally do, and mainly is just because I thought she was quite good-looking when I first saw her, and I thought, well, you know, good-looking actresses get more parts, so I was curious to see if she was in anything else and actually looked her up, which is normally your end of the responsibility. Did you?
I did, yeah, nothing... really jumped out.
She was actually in something a couple of years ago. She was a spoken word actress or something. But either way, I also saw some stuff on Google of her doing some signings for the role of Heather in some Only Fools and Store Horses stuff. But I did, funny enough, after looking her up, she'd been in quite a few things as an extra or whatever. But she wasn't that a convincing extra. She was a little bit poor on some of her lines, I did think.
I just felt like she didn't have a lot to do, and there's really only two scenes where you're kind of asking for anything really from her. Like in the pub, that was kind of a nothing. But it is this scene, and then the last scene, and I just found them both a very meh. I really didn't. Yeah. I didn't really feel anything, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, as I said, I think the story's a bit poor here and as well. And as much as her husband buggered off, and I think they try to. Relate it to Del's experience with his dad, but it's not interesting enough to bring it all together and make me give a shit.
No, but she is still a bit lovely, and I still am a little bit invested because she seems nice and Del is quite smitten by her, so you do kind of the physicality that Del shows towards her very quickly is more than we've seen before. It's very close, very intimate.
It's no different to Pauline, and she was a dick. So
no, but she wasn't. He wasn't like hugging her, and like he was being thumb on the forehead, sort of, you know, submissive. Whereas here, it was more of a charming, cool, calm lover sort of thing. But I'm also getting ahead of myself because we see that a bit later. That scene closes, and we go into a nice little montage. Now the montage itself is not too bad, but the thing that did
not
it for
too good
me,
either, is it?
No, let's be honest. It's not too good. But the thing that did it for me was the song. Oh my god! That tune is such a tune. Fat Larry's band, Zoom. I don't know what it is about it. It just hit me,
yeah?
Man. I was absolutely loving it. I was just sitting there singing along. And for me, that bolstered the montage, because then I was kind of invested in loving the montage because of the music. And there was a few good comedy moments in there with at the first Del looks really pissed off. He sat in the rocking boat thing and he's like obviously not up for it, and then it slowly transitions to him actually being quite nice to the kid and getting, you know, a few little slapstick stick moments. But it's a little bit of a different montage. It's funny because we thought there weren't any more, but this is this one. We get a little bit of audio. It's obviously a bit more of a video montage. We get quite a few laughs. We get some good London backdrop for it as well. And I went very quickly from not thinking that I liked this episode to just kind of loving it all up to this point. I really liked the Spanish part. I really liked the flat. And now we got this absolute tune and London. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. I've completely got this episode wrong.
Montage went on forever. I genuinely thought it would never end. I went back after I'd finished watching it. I was like, I'm pretty sure that was a 6-minute montage. So I went back and checked how long it was. And it was only 2 minutes, but fuck me, they were the longest 2 minutes of my life.
I was just loving the song so much. It could have gone on forever. I just didn't want the song to end.
The song was kind of all right in a kind of a fun 80s kind of way, but I just found the montage so dull, and it was meant to obviously make you invest in their relationship. But after I've given up trying to invest in Heather because I didn't think she was particularly interesting. I think I actually wrote nice but dim at one point. And the kid you just see in that montage, but you never really like have him speak or anything. So you don't really, they try to play the Dell has become attached to the kid, but I don't think they really nail it at all. And so I just, yeah, I see what they're trying to do, but I just don't think they really did it.
Yeah. Are you too close to it though? Are you thinking about this a bit too much or?
I don't know. I just didn't think it was, I just didn't find it very believable.
That's a fair statement.
So we come out of the montage, and yeah, we have this scene where we do have a bit of Del interacting, actually without the music in the background, with the boy. Darren?
Yeah, sure.
Darren, the boy? Yeah. And Del and Grandad are washing the car in the background. I don't know if this means that they're all at her place, or he's at their place.
No, they're at Nelson Mandela, surely. They're all the flats are in the background.
Yeah, but I mean, it's London, man. There's flats everywhere. I mean, she lived in a flat. I mean,
yeah, but it looks like Nelson Mandela flats.
I'm sure it's a bit odd, because, yeah, but whatever. So they were there. They then give us some context. They tell us that they've been together 6 weeks now.
Oh, that's good, because I wrote in a note earlier that I wasn't sure on the time context, on the time reference. I must have missed that.
Some laughing, so it's really easily missed, which is a bit of a shame, because you kind of need it for context. But yeah, they say, they reference the fact that, yeah, they've been together 6 weeks. And they're kind of taking the piss that Del's like all loved up and, you know, getting on with the kid and all that sort of jazz. The sign in the van thing.
Yeah, I've put that that is the original Ali G and Majuli car sticker.
Shit. Yeah, nice. Good reference.
I'll come back to that, actually. I could do it right now, but I'll come back to it a bit later. But yeah, that's the end of that scene. And we go, I mean, we can talk about it. It's obviously terrible.
They've been together 6 weeks. It's mental.
It is a little bit much.
I did like one thing, though, which was, and again, this is me just having one of my weird woke moments. But when Rodney says, oh, people give me funny looks when I'm in, when I'm sitting there. And Grandad says,
oh, I wouldn't let that bother you, Rodney.
No?
No. They most probably just think you're a puff.
In a way, I think that's good, because that shows that, oh, it doesn't matter. They just think you're a puff. That's no big deal. So that's kind of good, that's no big deal. You know, after they had that scene in one a little while ago where Del was like freaking out because they thought Rodney was talking to a bloke on the phone.
Yeah, it was pretty dismissed, actually, which is a bit more woke.
Mm. Granddad got woke.
Oh, considering the demographic of people that listen to this are in their 50s, quoting words like woke is not going to help our listenership.
I am who I am. We make this podcast for us and hope others enjoy it, not the other way around.
All right, anyway, scene five, and we're into the flat, Del Boy, Dylan, the Trotters flat. We got Dylan in front of the mirror, which is a really, again, funny enough, it's a mirror image sort of scene, as it were. It's something we've seen a couple of times, and it's almost a carbon copy of sort of Big Brother when they first come into it, and he's looking in the mirror, very similar mannerisms and so on. And Rodney's making a few wisecracks at Del when Del's just kind of not really paying attention.
My earliest childhood recollection is of you standing in front of a mirror. Up until I was four, I thought you was twins.
Del's in the zone, isn't he? Like, you can tell he's getting everything just so. Like, he's more on it. He's not kind of getting ready and kind of jittery. It's more thoughtful, and I think this is, like, again, really good, like, physical acting from David Jason, because it's the same thing we've seen him do before, but it's different, and he looks different, and he is acting different, but it is very subtle.
Yeah, it's like focused.
Yeah, head in the game.
And Del starts to get the lay of the land for him and Heather becoming a bit more of a full-time thing.
Hey, Rod, how do you feel about Heather becoming your sister-in-law?
What?
No, not now, not immediately. I mean, you know, sometime in the future. I mean, you know, I haven't even mentioned it to her yet. I mean, I don't want to jump me guns,
hey? I wasn't sure of the time frame, because when I wrote the note, I didn't hear the 6 weeks, so I was kind of puzzled as to how mad this was. But now that I know it's 6 weeks, it's clearly mental. I mean, 6 weeks, and he's now talking about applying for a council house and potentially basically asking her to marry him, is what he says. He says making her your sister-in-law or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I mean, we know Dale has had his fair share of fiancés, so it's certainly true to character, if, you know, not that makes it any less weird, but it's not unusual for him.
And he heads back out, and we get another little Rodney granddad exchange, which I thought was quite nice.
I thought so too.
You start to feel that sort of, you know, even though both granddad and Rodney are, I don't know, critical of Dell and sort of give him a lot of shit, they all give each other a lot of shit. Rodney's clearly feeling the implications of what it's going to feel like to not have him around, kind of a bit bittersweet. He's kind of feeling happy. You can tell there's like Nicholas and Hedges just portraying that he is going to be genuinely happy for Dale, but also feeling the loss as well. And it's all, a lot comes across in a very few lines of dialogue. And then they very quickly realise that, well, Grandad says that he's going to pay for the gas and the rent and all that sort of stuff, which is kind of the afterthought, which is, again, pretty pleasant.
It's funny, I almost thought that was the initial thought, because there's quite a lot of like silence in that scene. It's very nicely put together. But then they do seem to be contemplating it from Dell's perspective and, you know, being genuinely happy for him, like you said. But yeah, they are absolutely buggered without him.
And we go along to scene 6. A really familiar scene for a lot of English people, with the classic Indian chimes in the background of the Indian restaurant. And Delboy orders a pretty bog-standard Indian. He's gone for all the right stuff there. A couple of curries, naan, bit of chicken on the side. You know, really a bit of, couple of onion bhajis. Basically, like, just a bog-standard Indian order.
The rice is the one bit he cocks up, of course.
But yeah, doesn't know the choices of rice, which is a massive amateur move. I mean,
we literally asked drops, for Uncle Ben's.
Yeah, and then does a really poor joke about the. This is just a bad joke for a bad joke. It's not written particularly well. It's not funny at the time. I don't know. It's just really, really poor joke.
I didn't even get the reference. What was that? What was he referencing?
Well, it's pilau rice, and he talks about taking the feathers out because it's like a pillow. Pillow rice.
Right, see, that was what I thought maybe was pilau pillow, but I was like, that's rubbish.
Yeah, it's not even a good joke or a joke that's bad enough to be funny, so.
No, it's just shit, yeah.
And very quickly, Dale goes pretty big and slaps a big old rock on the table, saying it's a Christmas present.
I mean, Dale's done a lot of proposals, we know this. And this is his method? I thought he'd be more practiced.
No, moments later, though, he does say that he's not, you know, the romantic type. And that's kind of the thing, isn't it? Like, he wears his heart on his sleeve, but actually he very rarely comes out and vocally really shows emotion. He plays on it and he talks some shit and says about people leaving him, but the moments where he is genuinely emotional, whether it's hardship or love or care, are really like intense moments within Only Fools. Otherwise, he's Del Boy.
Yeah, I do think that was well done, because I was wondering to myself when he says, I'm not a romantic, I was thinking, or at least he's not a poet, is exactly what he says. I was thinking, am I surprised by that? Because he seems so eloquent and good at some things. But then, yeah, I think you're right. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised. And that is very true to the time as well. But even still, I would have thought he could bust out a slightly better proposal than that.
Yeah, kind of. I think it's a lack of confidence. But even in really late episodes with Raquel, when we get that far down the line, I think it's touched on that he is not very good at showing his emotions. He's loving to her, but I don't think that he is particularly vocal or articulate or poetic about it. So that there's a real good continuity there for sure. But a really funny moment here when she asks him if it's an engagement ring.
Del, is this an engagement ring?
No, it's a set of socket spanners. Of course it's an engagement ring. No, I'll change it if you like. See, remember what you said, that you liked solitaire diamonds? So I thought, well, you know, I'd get her a cluster of solitaires.
Which is a really good joke, actually. That after the previous one missing, I laughed out loud pretty hard at that joke.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, I got the joke. I thought it was funny.
Caught me off guard, that one. So I was saying about the emotional roller coaster. This is when I got angry. Heather breaks down a little bit once realizing it's the engagement ring, and says her husband's written to her. He's moved to Southampton and he wants them to move with him. And kind of straight away, you can see Dale's hurt and taken back a little bit, and says the guy's obviously, you know, he's no good and all that sort of stuff. And then Heather just stamps on his heart more and is like, I still love him. Stamps on it even further and says, I love you, just like a brother.
Friend zoned him, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely friend zoned him. And then it's like, you know, you have apparently he hasn't shown enough ways that made her know how he felt. I mean, and then I referenced, then I thought earlier, later on, the whole Del and Heather thing on the car. I mean, is that not a pretty gross sign of your affection?
I mean, it's literally a sign. Want?
Yeah, I mean,
they got thrown out of a planetarium for smooching. So for this doesn't really. This is all a bit jumbled. Because in the montage they show a lot of physical affection. There's physical stuff quite early on. So the belief that she didn't really get that he was into her doesn't really wash, and I don't think she sells it very well in her description either. The fact that she would want to go back to her husband is kind of a separate issue. I don't think they needed to do the friend zoning thing. I think it doesn't really work. It doesn't really make sense.
I think she's just massively a dick. I think it doesn't matter how she plays it, because she can play it absolutely fine. I think Heather, the character, is just stupid. I mean, her husband only wrote to her 1 week ago, and she's already decided to move to Southampton, because that comes out seconds later, to go and uproot her life and that of her kids, to go and live with her ex-husband who just walked out one day, whose job is a Father Christmas.
Good solid job, that.
No job security. And she's leaving in a week. So it's taken her a week to decide to move, hasn't told Del, waiting for the right opportunity to do it, and has already decided that she's going to leave in a week. How she's done that, I don't know. I mean, Dale's been mullered. She's literally spat him out and just left him for dead. And I'm like, I was just like, I've gone from angry to now just feeling super cut up for him, because, you know, there's real vulnerability in Dale and David Jason's performance there. Like, you can see he's trying to clasp onto it. So yeah, I was emotional all over the place, mate. I was breaking down.
Oh, all right. I wasn't really sure how we're meant to feel about her, because on the one hand, she does have the anger of the whole, you know, he couldn't get a job. That was a big problem. And that's maybe why he left. And now he's managed to go and build a job and stuff. And while that is obviously completely wrong, I do think that was almost like a thing that I think maybe people would have accepted and understood at the time. So I'm not sure if you're meant to accept that as an excuse, or is this, at this point they're just piling it on that she is a dick. I'm not really sure, but I'd say the whole scene, like David Jason, you know, with his facial expressions and like he's holding onto her hand, and yeah, that's really good. But she's just a bit wishy-washy, and it kind of, for me, just detracts from the whole building up of emotion, because she's so wishy-washy, then I feel less for Del, because I feel it's more like just Del having one of his flings, because this person's no one special or interesting anyway. This is not a one that's got away. She's a meh, forget about her. Like, she was no good for him. So then that kind of detracts from it as well, you know. This is not a one that got away for me at all. This is just some mild love interest.
No, and it's obviously fairly short term, and I'm not massively emotionally invested in it, but I'm just very empathetic of Del. I can really feel the heartbreak that he's feeling in that,
yeah,
in
no,
that particular
fair.
Moment. But that's it. That's pretty much come to the end. So he has a wander outside. We've got some very.
Do you reckon he ate the curry, or do you reckon he just buggered off?
Ooh, probably haven't got an appetite. I'm just putting myself in that situation.
Do you call the waiter over and just go cancel it all, or do you, you know, half it? I'll try and get through some of it.
I reckon 2 times out of 10, I'm probably eating the curry.
I'm definitely taking at least a bargee.
Yeah, it depends how. I mean, it was pretty quick. He probably just cancelled it all. But
I'd be running to the bar to make sure they didn't pop the cork on that champagne. Is it a bottle of your finest champagne? If you've not looked at the wine menu in many restaurants, that is a dangerous thing. These days, every restaurant
in an Indian restaurant, you'd be lucky if you got Prosecco.
No, sure, but even some dodgy Indian restaurant might have a secret fucking bottle of Bollinger's for like £100 a bottle, just for like that one time a local celebrity comes in. So brave.
Maybe. But I'd just get the curry and the rice to go with a bargee on the side. But anyway, he walks out without his takeaway, and we've got some somber carols going on in the background, and he glances at the Del and the Heather on the car, which is what aided my thought to the how does she think that he hasn't shown the affection bit. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, what more does she want? I just hate her, and I'm just feeling like,
right,
with all the somber music in the background, and it's just getting to this like soberest point. And then the carol singers just suddenly burst into We Wish You Merry Christmas.
I was surprised that didn't get more laughs. I thought that was really funny. The audience kind of chuckled.
It got quite a few laughs, didn't it?
Yeah, it got a few, but I generally thought that was very funny. I thought that was really good.
But for me, this is when everything just flips really quickly. So that happens, and there is a little laugh, but actually it's the smile. David Jason gives a smile, because through all of this shit, it's been a little bit heart-wrenching. They've played it, obviously, for that in that scene at the Indian. That little smile is just enough to be like, actually, none of us are going to be that hang up on that. We're going to live to fight another day. No worries. And it kind of, everything is forgotten. This is what I mean about the emotional roller coaster. Mm. You know, I went in excited for the episode, had a little burst of nostalgia, was really happy with a few things, got angry, got upset, and now all quickly, like for me, it's like Phoenix from the Ashes. I've just gone full circle on this episode. And although I didn't love the episode, for me, I went through just a roller coaster. And now when he smiled again, I was like, oh yeah, this is still only fools. I'm happy. I love life. Life's good.
Blimey, you've had a journey, haven't you?
I did have a journey. I don't know why.
Do you know what it is? I think it's your jet lag. I think you're emotional. You know, like the night. Have you ever woken up with a hangover and like a really emotional advert, like almost makes you tear up because you're just very sensitive? That's what I'm putting this down to.
I think half of it was that I watched half of the episode in preparation this morning, because I woke up quite early, so before I went off to do some work, I watched half of the episode, which was all of the good shit, and then when I came back, it was all of the bad stuff.
All the deep shit.
So I came, like, everything was brilliant, and I came back and I was like, what's this, screw you, I hate you, bitch. I actually wrote bitch with loads of exclamation marks, because I was livid. and then was all smiles at the end. So he walks up to the bloke, the head bloke of the carolers.
The head bloke of carolers.
Yeah, and
it's the official title.
Waves a massive note in front of him. I guess it's probably a fiver, but God knows it's big back then.
Yeah, it is a big note. More like a sheet of paper.
Apparently everyone and his dog, good pun there, Jamie, knows old Shep. So all he's got to do is whisper it, and seemingly before Google, when you could look up the lyrics, everyone just knows it. So started busting into some old Shep, and Del drives off into the sunset or the starry night in the old three-wheel van.
After they've sung about two lines.
Yeah.
Waste for fire, wasn't it? But it was a poetic close.
Yeah. And close credits. He's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La la la
la. La 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 la. Well, that was that then. I think, I'm obviously not been particularly subtle about my thoughts on the episode, but to kind of fully summarise, I found it a poor imitation of what was already not one of the best episodes, and that was No Greater Love. I found it had most of the same beats, only less funny and less interesting. That one was different, which had loads of things that were only in that episode that made it unique and were quite interesting. It was about Rodney, which is a bit different. It was a lot more serious because of like the violence aspect. And this just was a lot of the same stuff, but without any of the same sort of stakes. And it was just really wishy-washy. And I find it crazy that Only Fools is famous now for its Christmas specials, probably more than anything, because that's kind of how they ended. You know, there's half a dozen Christmas specials towards the very end. I don't know what they're famous for. So Only Fools and Horses is really Christmassy. But yet, that Christmas special in the last series and this one, I've thought were both poor. Two of probably the poorest episodes. I think each Christmas special is the worst episode in its respective season. Is there a worse episode in this season?
You've gone really. I mean, this is a really strong season, and this is almost certainly the worst episode of that season. Now, that is not wrong, but it's hard to group all of the Christmas specials and look at them as a single point of reference because I don't know. An episode is still a standalone episode, so I don't know that I can make that sort of comparison. I quite liked the last Christmas special. I thought it was quite good. It was a little bit weaker at the end, but I really liked the depiction of the Trotters and the Flat and that sort of, you know, iconic Christmas Day sort of thing. This wasn't very Christmassy, but
very un-Christmassy, in fact, wasn't it? Almost no reference to it.
No, but I'm not worried about it being the finale of the episode. I mean, it has ended a bit on a weaker note, but you know, every episode in the series up until that point has been super strong, so I'm not fussed. I went through a bit of a personal roller coaster. I don't know why so much, but I certainly liked it more than what I was expecting to on the close of the last episode. I actually did quite enjoy it. I thought there were some really good bits in there that made me think, and I was quite passionate about the notes that I was writing. I don't know why, but I was just invested a lot more. It might have, maybe it's just, you know, maybe I'm just in a sensitive mood or jet lagged or whatever, but for some reason I was invested in it. I don't know if it's because it was our first sort of Dale heartbreak thing with Rodney. We always know it's a silly little game. He's a young boy and it's never going to work out. And even though I know this doesn't work out, I think seeing a really vulnerable Dale throughout the episode is something that we don't see a lot. As soon as he sees her, he's quite vulnerable. And then he's like really into the kid and he's clearly gone balls deep when he's putting Heather and Dale on the car. And then he's talking about marriage, like, in a very short amount of time, we've got a lot of commitment and vulnerability from Dell. And then when it breaks down at the end, I kind of am I'm kind of really feeling for him. So for me, which I'm generally a bit of an emotionless man, or have been. I'm not nearly as in touch with my emotions as, say, you or our father. But I wasn't actually emotional. I wasn't crying or anything. But I was a lot more invested than I was expecting to be.
Yeah, it's fine. I think I put a lot of it down to not great dialogue given to Heather. Maybe at least one missing scene between them rather than a montage. But then also Heather's acting. It didn't really pull me in, and I was kind of, it was a stronger start than I'd expected. That Spanish thing was a strong start, and the scene in the flat was pretty all right. But then, as I said at the time, it did just take that downward turn, and it never even looked like it might recover. Like, from then, I was just like, ugh, I'm bored. It was without doubt the episode I've enjoyed the least so far. It may be one of my least favorite episodes of the entire show. And having watched it and having been so unturned round by it, like I have in some of the other episodes I didn't think I liked, I think there's a good chance this is going to be my least favorite episode, and I won't have this sort of reaction again. I'll be surprised if there's another episode I feel this strongly against.
Well, curious if it was anyone else's favourite episode, if anyone else loved it. So drop us a comment or a shout or a message or an email or whatever it might be, and let us know your thoughts. We've both been a little bit more critical, probably coming in as one of our least liked episodes so far. But that is the end of Series 2. We've managed to nail out another series, which is, I'm impressed at us.
This is good.
Done pretty well. Looks like we are moving on to a new season, a new series, Series 3 as of next week. For me, this is probably one of my favourite series. I don't know why. I think when we had the VHS box set, I remember that one was yellow, one was blue, and the Series 3 was white, and it just looked better than all the rest. I know that sounds like a really silly thing, but Series 3, like, there's obviously a little bit more of we're a bit more comfortable, so there's a few more things going on, there's a bit more production value, there's a bit more budget. You know, like the first season of any series, it's a little bit clunky still, and although the characters are very fully formed quite early, you know, we're getting more comfortability now. We're getting to know everything. And I'm super looking forward to Series 3. I had a quick flick through at some of the episodes, and there are some absolute winners there. Super looking forward to getting into those. So the next week's episode is Homesick, which I don't remember a shed load about, but just the core points.
Interesting. I hadn't actually looked it up, so I was curious to see what you were going to say, because I hadn't checked.
Yeah, so Homesick, which we have referenced some of the things in this episode in the last couple of series. I think it's a bit of a slower episode again, so we'll have to see where we go with that one.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I think this series has definitely had more production value, which is something we talked about at the end of the first series. I'll be interesting to see how that increases over time and what more we learn. I think it's been a really good series, actually. I think many of the episodes I've enjoyed more than I thought. Even the ones I already really liked I've been so pleased at how well I've enjoyed them again, having not watched them for maybe a couple of years. I think it's been awesome. Really enjoyed it.
So thanks for joining us for Series 2. Without further ado, we will leave you with our closing music for this series is going to be, of course, Old Shep. And now that you have enlightened me to the Johnny Cash version, which I've never heard, we're going to play that, because I'm sure other people want to hear it as well.
Nice, good choice.
Cheers, we'll catch you next week for Homesick. Take it easy, stay safe.
Cheers, Jay, catch you later.
Just a boy and his dog, we were both full of fun.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, onlyfoolsbrothers, or on Twitter, we're at onlyfoolsbros, or if you want to send us a longer message, you can email us at onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. Also, really appreciate it if you could give us some sort of rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much. Goodbye.
To the rescue he came. He jumped in and helped pull me out. Well, the years sped along, and at last he grew old.